Dear venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, today is our third day in the retreat and the second session as far as the question and answer session is concerned. So there are written questions available. I will proceed with the available questions, and meanwhile I cordially invite if there are any other questions or inquiries or any statements as the time permits. You may present it with the help of the microphone provided so that the recording will be better. The first question was like this. Is awakening reversible? When one is awakened, is it possible that he, she revert back to the old self? There are some four stages irreversible. They are known as the first fruition and path and fruition, second, third, fourth. They are irreversible. Up to that level, there are a lot of other semi stages, and they are erasable, reversible, and when you are at the peak of that particular, what you call the insight knowledges, you feel like it's permanent and it's pervading and it's very consistent. But again, when the alignments of your mental factors go for disarray or disarrangement, then again the self can come, and again you can feel that you have been withdrawn back and go. So therefore you have to understand there are some reversible and there are some irreversible stages. But to give one example that is kind of a extraordinary one was after the renunciation, great renunciation of the Gautama the Buddha, Siddhartha as a ascetic, the kingdom went to another person known as Mahanama, and he also was a very devoted person from the same clan, and he went up to the second stage, Sakadagami, and again it happened him to go for the duties at the palace and executing all the government rules and regulation and kind of thing. One day he entertained a doubt, telling that when the cabinet is there, when the Supreme Court cases are there, sometimes he has to take odd decisions, the capital punishment and all the kind of thing. So he thought, under such circumstances I am making this decision, but he is not personally happy about that, but can't tell that is the way the rules and regulations are. So he thought, what if I am going to die under such kind of a perplexity in the mind? What kind of a refuge of the permanent status that I have achieved? So, finding a time, he went to the Buddha and told, one day when we are doing our duties and official work, so much of things we have to get involved, and sometimes we can't keep the integrity. And under such perplex situation, if I am to die, what will be my destiny? Then the Buddha gave him an example and told that you may answer as you like. The example the Buddha given was, if someone take a clay pot and fill it with the ghee and cover it with a piece of cloth, and so that the pot can hold the ghee, and then everything put into the water, what will happen? The king told, the ghee is lighter than the water, clay parts are heavier than the water. If the clay parts are more responsible, the pot will go down to the water body. If the ghee is going to be the upward push, and if it is prominent, the pot will be floating. And if it is exactly like the specific gravity of the water, it may be floating inside the body of the water, wherever it may be. Okay, the Buddha says, good. And then Buddha says, if someone go with the club and break the pot, what will happen? Then the king told, naturally the clay parts will go down, the ghee will come to the surface. Then the Buddha says, once you develop the mind and go on beyond beyond these irreversible stages, your mind is going upward, body is breaking down and going down. So that is a natural law. It is nothing you have to think about, or it is already decided. So it's a very good example. Think about, or it is already decided. So it's a very good example. Even if you have permanent, so to say, achievements, then if you are going to engage with day-to-day activities as a layman or as a monk, there are a lot of disturbance and perplexed mind states. And under such circumstances, he or she may entertain doubts. But the mind is working according to the universal law of the mind. So therefore, once you've gone through these irrevertible stages, it is nothing to worry. They will sort it out at such a critical situation according to the law. So nothing to worry. Then the king was very happy. And he continued to do the same responsible task, but to not to entertain doubts on that kind of thing. So I think it is somewhat relevant to this question. So someone has to keep the issue open as to reversible and irreversible stages are there. Even irreversible stages taken place, the particular person may entertain doubts. That is also possible, but that does not, that entertaining doubt does not undermine already achieved irrevocable stages. Venerable Sir, what is the end point of consciousness? Kindly advise when you are analyzing and observing the consciousness according to the canonical presentation, there are three equilibriums. One thing is consciousness related to the senses, sensuous impingements as well as the faculties like the eye and the visual objects, and that is what we call kamaloka or sensuous pressure, sensuous sphere. When you go into the meditative absorption or samatha jhana, or sometimes some people put it as a vipassana jhana also, inside kind of absorption, you fairly cut off from the senses as well as of your the faculties, and you feel kind of an equilibrium, which is immaterial kind of a sphere, and that also kind of a balance. And that is a spiritual experiment, experience. It's a good, appreciable. And being there, either you can go back to the sensuous pleasure, or go deep into the spiritual path, that is to take up the vipassana way, and when you go there, the self-identity of the consciousness become oceanic. It dissolve off into the back. So therefore, their own word, you can locate it, you can make out from the balance. So it become, it is called, Freud used the terminology oceanic. And the Buddha used this anidasana vinyane, non-manifested consciousness. That means it is not recognize this part is me, this is not me, or self and non-self. So therefore, there is no comparison between the in and out or conceit, and nothing to the hold or desire. So therefore, it is kind of a dissolving, and that is also happening in two stages. One thing is your final enlightenment and arahantship. You come to know due to your ignorance and due to your craving and due to your conceit. You hold one part telling this is me, this is self, and the other part is not self. That is due to the manifestation of the consciousness backed by your ignorance. But when that ignorance is gone, it goes back to its original elements. That means non-manifested. That is called anidasana vijnana. So, as an example, it says that or given us an epithet that when a river go and entering into the sea, ocean, the river water lose its identity. It is of course fresh water, go into the brisk water and lose the identity. The name of the river also dissolving into the ocean, that is called oceanic, and that is how the vijnana it happens. Or yet another technical information is, when the river is flowing or in the ocean also, there may be some vortex, there may be some diasulia, vortex. And as far as the vortex is there, you can locate it. You can tell this vortex is bigger than this, and this is smaller, and this is having so much of the volcanic effect and all the kind of things. Once the vortex dissolved off, what happens? You can't locate it. You can't say it is a vortex because it has become yet another in the same body, water body. Earlier also was there some water, now also it is water. So the vortex is an abnormal, irrational power just out of the water body, and whenever it is become irrational and self-motivated, self-propelled, you can locate it. Once it's dissolved, you can't say where it gone and where is it now. So these are the example given. So I think best thing is to you to experience it. So you have to use the mic. That is.
Venerable Bhante, at that point, do you have any form, like any form in i.e. rupa, that is describable?
Two examples that I cited, easy to comprehend it. So when there's a vortex, it sucks all the dirt and it has a convex water level, water inside the water surface will be sucked inside like a funnel. And therefore it has a form. It gathers dirt. And when the vortex finished, still the dirt, the dry leaves and kind of thing will be just flowing or floating on the surface. It is not belongs to the vortex, but the form is there. Form means that the particles were sucked due to the irrational power. So it is, so far it was belongs to the vortex. Now the vortex stopped. The particles are floating on the water, but vortex is not claiming it. There's not one to claim. Particles are particles, but it is, you can't say it is whether it belongs to the water body or to the vortex. Likewise, this material, anything confronted with our consciousness become volitional, become kind of our own relationship. Whatever may be the matter, whatever may be the materiality, come in contact with our consciousness, come in contact with our faculties, are the only troublemakers. Through that only we can have to get the liberation. All the other available the materiality we can deduce, yet not contacted, not yet confronted or avenued to our faculties, they are not creating suffering, upon which we can't meditate. Through that we can't go to the liberation. We can go only through the liberation, through the matter which is already avenued, and then at the supreme level of consciousness, you see the matter itself become void. There is no such a form, no shape, no gravity. They become. So only the evolution, only the changing of your perception to the matter becoming irrelevant, becoming uncommitted. So why worry? I don't know whether I am communicating with you all. It's difficult. But matter become matter, but it not belongs to anyone. It not belongs to me. It is not creating suffering, not creating pleasure. They are there. Earlier you claim part and parcel of the form or matter, calling this is me, this is mine, this is myself. And the Buddha said that is that what you collected as yourself is the part going to give the suffering. That you call my form, my matter. And if it is big, big suffering. If you are collecting little, little suffering. That is the meaning of, middle path. So, if you use it for utility value, that is justifiable. If you are using less than utility value, you go to the self-mortification. If you are going to use bigger than what utility value, it is called the consumerization and the luxurious. So, the matter changes. Even in the unenlightened beings, at the enlightened being, disclaim it, disavow, disown, And therefore, whether the mat is available or not, it is not a concrete. I don't know. I am communicating or not.
Can I ask one more question? So, at that point, we are now talking about a point beyond recognition or cognition, because you won't be able to describe this state of awareness into words.
So what is the point? What is the question you are asking?
I guess the question I'm asking is, how do we, in the practice, say if someone by chance does get there? If someone does get to that point of consciousness, how would you describe it?
You can't say grammatically someone can go to that consciousness. That one is already gone by the time. You see that you are trapped in the question. So therefore, being here, you can't think about, I mean, being here in the gravitational force, you can't think about what is happening in the space. Non-gravitational work, we can't comprehend because we have been brought up and everything happened under the gravitational force. So astronaut goes and says, hey, there are non-gravitational situations, you can't keep the things like that. They are start floating and all. Then you have to open your mouth and wait and see. Is that so? Because there you can't experience the gravity. Here you can't experience non-gravity. Likewise, when the consciousness is sucking, when the consciousness is claiming, when the consciousness is always committing, it recognizes its capacity by the amount of material acclaimed, amount of material you grab as yourself. So that is relevant with the consciousness. Slowly, slowly, consciousness is going to disclaim it, disavow it, disown it. So the activity of the consciousness also reduces comparatively. Ultimately, things are happening out of the universal law, that is called Taoism, that is called the Tathata, suchness. So who cares? This matter is heat, and this is cold, and this is big, and this is small. Who cares? Because you have no claim, you have no relevance, you have no committed with that. So that is the consciousness called liberated one, or non-manifested consciousness. Matter is there, but it is not grabbing, it is not gratifying, not acclaiming. So there is no suffering. Yeah, as far as the claiming is there, suffering is there. So this is the way we can go with the logics. Maybe when you're experiencing a complete different way, this is how our language is so limited. It is already language only can talk about the convention. But when you go to the absolutes, language becomes very weak. But the Buddha managed some or the other through the conventional words to the conventional world to pass the message that there is a vachasa state beyond your letters, beyond your words, beyond your communication, and it's experienceable. And that very thing you can't communicate. That is called atakka vachara. That means you can't put into words. So therefore, linguists come and say, if it is not explainable, there should not have any such a state like. So Buddha says, never mind, you can hold that view. But I am telling, I know what you are talking, I know yet another beyond, so I'm proceeding. Reverend Bhante, in your last talk, evening you refer to the Sanya Sankara. Could you please elaborate on these points? Definitely within these days, now we are on the Rupa, this whole Sutta is going for all the five aggregates. So I will keep this question because time to come, definitely we are going to deal them systematically one by one as the particular discourse is going. So I am going to the next question. Dear Venerable Sir, a question regarding everyday life and the dedicated area of right or skillful speech. Delicate area of right or skillful speech. How to give criticism constructively to evoke positive change. So that is to, if you wish to evoke or create a positive change for another person, criticism the constructively, I mean, it is a huge amount of huge areas and opportunities. You are not an opportunist, but whenever someone is suffering, whenever someone is in need, whenever someone is asking something, then you have the connection with that particular psychology, and you have to help in a way. The way the particular person asking definitely may be for the sensuous pleasure. But you can meanwhile and tell, I can help you, of course, this your the need in the sensuality, but why don't you think about little further, going to the spiritual or any transcendental one? So through that opportunity, you can touch his psychology and go deep into the constructive criticism. Even in the difficult situation, your sphere, your limit is limited to the sensuous pleasure. But why don't you think about something beyond? Likewise, you can get the suffering and pass the message when in a very skillful way. Because a lot of people, many people, there are some need, materialistically or spiritually or kind of thing. So you must share with them, but don't stop them. Just at the spiritual, materialistic level, just try to give little more to the spirit. How do, if someone is criticizing another person in front of me, is it a good policy to abstain from saying something in someone's absence, which you would not say in their presence? As far as the first question is concerned, if someone is criticizing other one, so you have to have the suspended attention, but evenly suspended attention and suspended decision not to commit to this person or that person. If someone is asking help, you have to tell, I have to come to a middle path, I am without bias, you can do it. And best thing is, of course, to withdraw as much as possible, because when the people are critical, their minds are not deep. Whatever you do, they can't grasp it, because it is in a perpetuation, sorry, the perplexity. So therefore, you have to tell, okay, please give me little time. Now you all are a little agitated. Once it's calmed down, I will give my view. So definitely you have to direct the responsibility and tell them later, but don't rush, don't put the fuel into the fireplace. So one has to take the situation under control by participating, but not immediately. You have to take time. That is the way what I feel practically. Is it a good policy to abstain from saying something in someone's absence, which you would not say in their presence? Of course it is, yes. But we are not so disciplined. You can easily understand when you are talking something in front of him or when you are talking without him, completely two tones. Unless you come to the enlightenment, this is there. So therefore, at least if you happen to talk about someone, later you have to tell, under such circumstances, it happened me to express my view about you, and it was like that. Otherwise, very difficult, because our mind is cheating ourselves. Even if we wish to talk in the most destructive way, the words are jumping, then we think. They go and make the damage. Ultimately, you may feel sorry. But can't help. Even if you are thinking, you even in the future, you may find you have these weaknesses. So politicians are the masters. Without any self-discipline, without any restrainment of the faculties, without any moral shame and the fame, he knows which is beneficial and creating power. they are so Machiavellism. They use the word in such a way, even in the front of the enemy, go and shake hand and tell how are you and all the kind of thing. But underneath something different. But the yogi is not a politician. So therefore, best thing is to reduce the amount of words. But whenever it is happening, you must understand the words can do more damage than what you think. Because what the other person listen is not what you talk. So therefore, it's simply you can put, if someone to go to the hell or netherworld, it is not due to the mind and not due to the body, but due to the mouth. Not people are going due to the killing and stealing, but basically lying, slandering, harsh words and carrying tales. You see, three physical misdeeds, three mental misdeeds, four verbal misdeeds. They are the one creating wars. They are the one creating love affairs. And these are the conflagration. So if you can control it, it's a real great gain. But very difficult because we are now in the information technology. Our era is known as information technology. We are already caught up. What if the criticism is justified? So you have to apologize, you have to accept it. Irrespective of the person and the time, you must have the openness to accept criticisms if it is constructive and justifiable. Are all views wrong or are some views more correct than others? Both are correct because views, each and everyone is wrong. There is no something called correct view. Any view is wrong. So Buddha says, Dikchincha anupa gamma silava dasanena sampanno kamesu viniyageda nai jatu gabba seyyam punarechiti. Don't incline to any view. That inclination is make, how to call, arc. In Sinhala we call chapala. Chapa. Chapa means not a straight line. It's an arc. Whenever the arc is there, relevant to the arc, there is a point. Then the arc and the point is going to connection and it is rotating in the perpetual way. When the line is straightforward, it is going to the infinitum. There is no respective point and it is not coming back to the same point. It's once and for all trip. All the other views are nothing but a kind of an arc. It is rotating this way or that way. And whenever it is rotating, it is always perpetuating. Always perpetuating around its own center. That center is the ego. It maintains by rotating. But there are some better views or efficient views. So from the Putujjana's level of or commoner's point of view, through the Arahanship, you are replacing gross views by the subtle views. Bad views by good things by the better things. So it keep on for refining. That is what happens in as far as the view is concerned. Dear Venerable Sir, the more I meditate, I feel successfully in my practice. The more self-confident I develop. Likewise, faith in the path. Sometimes conceit also arises. What is the difference between the self-confidence and conceit? How to maintain a healthy balance? I think mostly today talk I will tackle this. So therefore, excuse me, I am keeping this question also postponing. Tonight in the talk, I think I am going to go into that little in detail with respect to the form. Dear Venerable Bhante, when the breath becomes subtle and disappear, what meditation object do you suggest to observe and how? Object is the no object. You have to meditate upon no object, animitta. As far as this nimitta is concerned, nimitta means the object, the sign. And when the object is disappearing, that means the sign is disappearing. So you must find the possibility to maintain the mindfulness and the concentration without a hanging sign without an object. So then if you can go into that, maintain, let the mind to understand this is a full equilibrium state, this is full contented state, this is full satisfactory state, why not be there rather than searching another one, rather than jumping further. And this is called seasoning or mastering. And in the warfare also, this is in the battlefront at a time you attack. And you grab hold another part of the other enemy's territory. And the second thing is you have to have a operation to establish the power. Without establishing, you won't fight. You go keep on, you are not going fighting. You gain the land and then establishing the power. And once that is finished only, the forefront is again advancing. So likewise in the meditation, once you go up to certain stage, you have to season it. You have to familiarize it. You have to master it. And then onward, simply the mind knows what to do rather than your rational knowledge. If you are going to put the rational knowledge, that is putting the cart before the horse. Then onward you are lost, finished. So therefore, one has to get the correction or confidence, more and more the mind refine, that refined mind is better guide than your rational knowledge, than your thinking. So when such a thing happens, you must surrender yourself. You must withdraw yourself, let the mind to take the upper hand, and you have to just, it is called autopiloting, and you see things are more harmonious, burning little energy, well balanced, and you have to have a comfortable ride rather than you try to piloting it. But we are so much accustomed to forking fingers into these smooth matters, so therefore even the matters run in the smooth way, we have the habitual this thing, forking fingers. Accordingly, you suffer. So when the system is mature, let them fly. Let them fly. So then only the you can be a neutral observer and see how the nature is happening. And it's very harmonized. It is running very nicely. We really appreciate your kind present compassion, instruction. Thank you. Venerable sir, thank you for your patience and generosity in respect to these questions. When I am engaged in metta meditation, I feel a sense of contentment and joy. The effect of this meditation also lasts a longer time. Could you please explain how metta and insight meditation can be balanced? You may read as one particular sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, Metta Sahagata Sutta, and there are it's a very nice a comparison between yet another teacher and the Buddha talking about practical utility value of the metta. The starting phrase, the Buddha says, Subha paramaham bhikkave metta ceto vimuttiṃ vadāmi idapanyasa bhikkhuno uttariṃ appati vijjantasa. Just a gist of the whole thing, the Buddha says, Subha paramaham bhikkave metta ceto vimuttiṃ vadāmi. That is the way Buddha says, see only the love spots. That is what I mean by metta. See the bright side of the scene. Don't go for the bad side. Then that is not metta. So Subha paramaham bhikkave metta ceto vimuttiṃ vadāmi. So till you go up to the arahanship, finishing your task, see only the positive side, see only the love spots, then you will be a lovable person. But if you have the nasty, dirty habit of looking at the bad side, even the Buddha can't help you. Not only the metta. But we always have this balance. Our mind is so, searching to see the negative side. We don't know it is happening out of head. We call it is the balanced wisdom. But the Buddha, point blank, he says, see only the love spots. And Pollyanna put it in a very nice way. Pollyanna says, you must try to find a reason to be glad under any circumstances. Then you can be a Pollyanna. I am very happy with that little girl. So, at the America, each year, they show this film. From 1919 onward, daily to see the people, the positive side, and then you are not going into the Nibbana, you feel like relax, because every other media is finding the bad side, the dark side. You listen to the news, all the burglaries and all the rapes and everything concentrated and put into within 1 hour and again repeating. So while eating, while talking, you are looking at the whole dirty things. Otherwise, you feel alienated. You don't feel like living in the society because you need this dosage either through the media or gossiping. Otherwise, very difficult. In agriculture, we are being taught the piggery, how to keep the piggery. Animal husbandry, take the pigs. So we have the local type, that is indigenous type. They are not used to the cement floors. They are not used to the roofs. They live outdoor, but the efficiency is very low. If they are living outdoor, they are turning point is very low efficient. But if you keep it within the house, under a shade and cement, and given the facilities, little amount of grain can give a lot of flesh. So when they put into the cement, when they keep it under the clean situation, they develop anemia, lack of blood. Because they wanted to once in a way go and eat little dirt. Otherwise, no balance. So we have been asked to keep at least one basin full of sand or dirty soil. They come and hit it. And then they overcome this anemia problem. They can't be in the clean ground. Our mind is more, it's like a piggery. Always searching negative. Always searching something going wrong. And that make good novels. That makes a lot of tragedies. You see, in the films, if you compare the tragedies and comedies, tragedies make much appeal. And in the world, they say when the murderer of the George the V is being killed with the guillotine blade in front of all the people, so that is the biggest gathering in the world they have found. People came to see how that person's neck is cutting little by little, but by a guillot. You see, that is what we search, that is what we wish to see. So metta is completely different. It is contentment and it is usually only the love sports. That does not indicate there are no bad sides. But who cares? So it is called Subhaparamam Bhikkhave Metta Cheto Mukti Madami Ida Panyasa Puggalo. In this very dispensation, Uttaring Appadi Vijjansa, until you go to the Aranchi, only see the positive side, only see the love spots, only see the blissful part, that is enough. That's enough. So therefore, for this particular case, I would say, even though in the general instruction we ask you to sit and come to the balanced, relaxed and the symmetrical posture, that itself is metta. Sitting comfortably, relaxing, and bringing the mind to the present moment and say, here, now, I am sitting comfortably. It's the biggest metta. Many find difficult to do because you hate your body so much. You never give any comfort. You use it as either beautification thing or to drag things like a crane or imbalance machine to do this and that craft. Never you think about the balanced sitting. You never think about the balanced walking. And whenever this happens, you see how much we are unkind to our body. So, when we are in Kandubada, in a retreat, I was dealing about the Satta Bodhjanga, the seven factors of enlightenment. And there it happened me to talk about the metta. And there was a monk, he was an American one, gone to Vietnam War, and a very hectic person, but internally is a very calm person, but appearance is very hectic, six-footer. And he says, Bhante, I would like to relate one story to you as far as the metta is concerned. When I was in America, first time I went to a Roshi, a Japanese Zen master, or Tibetan master. And he asked her to sit and everything. My first time he asked to radiate metta to oneself. He says, consecutively 3 days I start to cry. I never be friendly with myself. I have never been in my life. So first time I am radiating metta to myself, everything was so emotional. I don't know whether I am successful or not. The crying. So the Roshi has told, it's a very good sign. Let the whole crying happens. After 3 days, he says, so much of relaxation. So in meditation, occasionally you meet yourself. You become self-aware, otherwise you are forgetting your whole self, whole being, maybe 100 years. Because of all the hobbies, all the likings and disliking is to escape from the present moment with yourself. So in the metta it comes. The first and foremost is you are sitting and you contemplate here, now I am. Even that is difficult because of our wrong way of thinking and wrong way of living. So that itself is metta. And if the particular person find metta is lasting and bringing the contentment, why not take little time to radiate metta? And once you feel the contentment, see the body, what is happening? What is happening in the present moment? And for example, at that time, if you can see in-breath and out-breath or rising and falling, you can observe it very clearly than without metta. So therefore, metta is becoming a temporary this thing to get into your primary object, and you go to the primary object with constructive ideas, positive ideas and contentment. So therefore, no harm. You can use it. Some people use the Buddha Anusati Bhavana, the collection of the virtues of the Buddha. Many things are pet issues. So it is really constructive, real advisable to go through it and go to the what is tangible, what is under your very nose. Could you also please explain the fine line between the observing mental phenomena such as anger, jealous, etc. with equanimity, without owing these emotions and suppressing them? I hope this course is going to give enough time in the future to discuss. Now we are making the groundwork on the form. With the help of that understanding, concentration and mindfulness, definitely we will go out of the mentality, so we can mark time till the due Dhamma talk is coming. So I am keeping that these questions. Venerable sir, please be kind enough to advise how we may overcome sleepiness, have reduce food intake too. Maybe food intake also have Bhatta Sammada, that after eating you feel like sleepy. And for me, what is the mistake of sleepiness? You can sleep, no problem. Because mind is not outwardly. Of course, maybe in dreaming. So, when I am practicing in Panditarama, I sit 1.5 hours or so, I find early for 20-25 minutes, situation is not under my control. Often I go and collapse and go for very odd appearance. So I find the other people find it is awkward to see that I am not in the full balanced state. And therefore what I did was I observed everything and presented to Pandita Sado. Pandita, this is what it happened. So I come and after sitting, I feel comfortable and I go through it. I don't know number of minutes lost. And my posture is also not balanced. And then again start to drag on, go to sleep and come back, go to sleep and come back, shaking and kind of thing. And all of a sudden everything disappears and the bright openness happens. And then onward I can go 1 hour. Then he says, if you are sure that after this kind of drowsiness, after 2-3 shocks, if it is coming and going to that brightness, forget about what the early part, let it happen. And whenever the brightness happens, understand that you earn with so much of sacrification of sleepiness and carry on. So therefore, I remember one day the same question asked by presenter Achandram. He says the sleepiness is good because you are falling inside your body. So it's a kind of a collection into inside. So don't try to do away with it. And for this kind of argument, Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Moggallana, after his Sotapannahood, he has thought that it will be better for me to go to a solitude place under a cave and start meditating. And Buddha, midday he was searching about what is happening and where the disciples are doing, and he found that he is nodding. Far away cave. And then the Buddha appeared in front of, as if appearing, and he asked, are you sleepy? Yes, sir. And after the first Maggajnana, and then the Buddha gave 7 points and Pachalayamana Sutra. It is called Pachalayamana Sutra, I think in Sanyutta Nikaya. He says, the first and foremost is, catch it at the first sign. That is sannya level. You feel like not to note. Just let the meditation to go, like you accommodate the sleep. And it is happening through your conscious recognition. And that is the easiest point to nip it at the bud level. Or otherwise, start noting. And if it is not working, start recitation. A very energetic, fruitful stock phrase to keep on reciting. But don't do it when you are in the group meditation. Because other people will come and tell me that we are in the noble silence. And then if it is not so, he asked to rub your all the skin, face, and pulling your ears so that blood circulation will again come to the epidermis. If it is not happening, go and do little walking meditation and wash your face with your cold water and see far away light sources like stars, the moon, and then also the sleepiness can break. If it is not working, he says best thing is to go and sleep. Sleep in the lion posture, making a determination after so much of time, I'll get up and start this thing. Because it's a natural balance. And sometimes the sleepiness appear as a result of meditation. That means the object becomes subtle, you are not prepared, object disappear, and then mind go to slumber. It is not asleep. And if you are not really get a good interview and a discussion, keep on, you criticize yourself, go to sleep. But it is not the case sometimes. So at such circumstances, you have to understand, you have to go through the beginning, the middle, and the end of the sleepiness. So you have to catch the beginning. Middle, you lose. At the end, you can catch it. Then some kind of awakening into this can happen. So therefore, it is yet another hindrance, and you have to work it with. But the funny fact is, whenever there are some noise, whenever there are some heat, whenever there is a pain in your body, whenever in thinking, no sleepiness. When everything is comfortable, then the main robber come and take you away. That you, once you prepared your house and equipped and furnished, then the robber come and rob everything. So therefore, more and more facility you give to the meditation hall, you can expect many people to go to sleepiness. In singular, buddhu enava, buddhi enava, very close. Buddhi Venava means of total enlightenment. Buddhi Yenava means sleepings. So these two, both the terms come from Buddhu, Buddhi Buddhu. So if you have any kind of a problem regarding sleepiness, you go and meditate, easily you can overcome it. Or otherwise you can go and see a Sinhalese film. And there also you can sleep very well. So therefore, just take it off. So you have to enlighten it. You have to see the beginning, the middle and the end of the sleepiness. And it is human. It is nothing much to worry about. Venerable sir, please help. After sitting for about half an hour, although the breath calms down, the body pains which manifest are unbearable. Then it is a battle observing the pain. The pain reduces for a while and then arises in the full force, so that concentration on the breath is, please advise, the breath is, I can't read the word. That means maybe concentration on the breath is may be disturbed, but let the word start with S-E. So that means the one, two points we can make it out. Even the pain is disturbing your mind, the breath is undisturbed. Breath is still calming down. And you can see and can verify this fact. The pain is sometimes very unbearably happened, but still the particular person reports can go to the breath and check. And it is calmed down. And the pain is so much disturbing. And therefore you see, you can't say the mind is agitated or not. Because if the mind is agitated, the breath also has to be aggravated. But it is not happening. But the pain is happening. And so if you are aiming, if you are looking at the problem through the concentration, of course you will be a failure. But if you are looking at the problem through the mindfulness, it's a very bright place. You can see at even this is troubled water, mindfulness is intact. It knows the pain is really disturbing you and it's very in full force. But you are aware, meanwhile the breath is there. If you go to the breath, breath is calmed down. So that means mindfulness is very efficient. It is very effectively serving the task, but it is not the concentration. But that is, there is a kind of a concentration also that is called momentary concentration, not the conventional type. So, working in this situation, slowly, slowly you will understand your bearability of the pain more factual rather than emotional. At the beginning, otherwise you will be emotionally moved by the pain. But if you are dealing with the mindfulness and the primary object, you can understand your threshold value, your immunity, your bearability is slowly, slowly increasing, and you can give the natural characteristic of the pain, whether it's a stabbing type, cutting type, burning type, single point or many points or changing the place. Likewise, you are observing it not to get rid of, but to get the natural characteristic. More and more you be with the natural characteristics, your time with the pain slowly, slowly can increase. So this is how you put up your bearability. And therefore, it is just like the sleep. The mindfulness is really in action. It is understanding, managing two things. One thing is disturbing, other one is calming down. But the mindfulness is intact. So it is a very, I would say, very advanced stage of the mindfulness, gaining the, this is called sati indriya, sati as a faculty, is the master, not the concentration, not the wisdom, not the energy, not the faith. The mindfulness as the faculty, balancing the situation. One day, you will understand, sometimes you completely collapse and pain will overcome. Sometimes again, amidst of everything, you can go to the breath and be mindful. And sometimes you are unmindfully changing your body and kind of a reaction happen. Even then, you are continuing. Even then, you are not giving up. And that is how the mindfulness become power of mindfulness or sati bala. Even distractions are there. you see the continuity. You never try to value the situation, judge the situation through concentration. If you are a lover of concentration, definitely end up with disappointments. If you love mindfulness, you see mindfulness is developing the versatility and the efficiency. So it is a real meditating or real tapas, that means ardent energy and the concentration. So the, whenever you are to face a serious illness in life future, or when you are to face a dear near one is suffering, you can really share this experience with that difficult situation if you have put up it within the meditation. So therefore it's a long valuable investment if you can continue with it. Dear Venerable Sir, in regards to the objectivity, observing the in-breath and out-breath, what is the recommended way to proceed when faced with the breath too subtle to notice? Recommended way is to expect it. Be prepared for that. Whenever you have the in-breath and out-breath and gross and demarcated that's in-breath and out-breath, that indicates the breath is face-to-face or the primary object is face-to-face, and you can see the chronological changes, chronological evolution of the object becomes subtler and subtler. And if you go prepared, it is disappearing, no much of hesitation. For example, nowadays, if you're observing the moon, at about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, it's full-fledged bright. But if you look at the dawn, you can see it is fading off as the sun brightness is increasing. And if you are to observe the still, the sun, you can see even if it is not luminous, even if it is not bright, you can notice it. It is there. But if you are glared and dazzled with the sunlight, you may find it is very difficult to trace. So therefore, whenever you are seeing the moon, which is becoming not prominent, prominence is decreasing, one by one, when as the sun brightness increases, it is decreasing. So that is because of your preparedness. You can master it little more than yesterday's sitting, little more than the previous sitting. So you must go deep and deep. My preceptor, he used to say, preparedness. Be ready for that disappearing object, disappearing sign. So that is the recommended way. I noticed that when I try to observe a very subtle breath, the breath can grow coarser and I end up with the sensation in my chest. That is possible because after a while, when you are tracing back, you are continuing with the tapering of breath. After a while, all of a sudden the breath, your continuity of the mindfulness distract and you giving up the operation, and again you will end up with the gain gross breath and you can be vidya. And due to this novelty, due to this unpreparedness, sometimes you get tensed. Can the heartbeat and the pulses may be increasing, but don't worry, you won't develop a heart attack. You can continue. And again the breath can become object, again it goes to the subtle, and you have to expect after a while you lose the grip. While losing the grip, many emotional body and the pent up energies and everything going to come out, and that is how you are preparing yourself to go into the subconscious. From the conscious, rational, tangible level, you are slowly going and coming to the subconscious and again coming, again going, like an astronaut learning from the gravity to go to the non-gravitational fields and again come to the gravity, again go in there, like changes are happening. So kind of acclimatization, kind of preparing the mind for example, you being a water being, try to be an amphibian to go to the dry land and again come back, and dry land and coming back like a tadpole becoming a frog. The tadpole is only living in water. If it is put into the out, it will die. But when the, so because they are living in the external lungs, but when the frog develop lungs inside, and skin also do start respirating, exchange of oxygen, so it can go out in the dry land as well as the water. Likewise, when it is happening, very interesting. That is a very real indication the mind is progressing. So you have to back it up. You have to facilitate it. You have to be prepared. You have to be full of faith, giving the full buck up with the regular practice, listening to talks, associating the advanced yogis, those who are already in the same fight, and then you see there's a kind of a new doorways opening. This is another episode that when I observe a subtle breath, the breath was felt at the chest area as expanding and contraction sensation as the comfortable feeling. So that is why the shapes and the manners, the breath become many, many, going to say many, many manners, many, many shapes, many, many patterns. So you are increasing the spectrum. You become a broad spectrum, tolerating everything, and they are the, it's reported that the comfortable feelings also. When I experienced to let go of the breath, as I felt myself clinging to a hard onto it, and expansive, explosive phenomena was experience. This is what usually called rising and falling of the abdomen. So sometimes the breath is representing as rising and falling, expansion, contraction, still a characteristic of air element. As there are too many different experiences, I am a bit lost as to which may go to in my meditation. As I am a bit lost, if you are totally lost, you are the winner. Because you are, still you are. That is why you are grasping into the frame. If you are completely give up and let everything to happen in the natural way, so we also will shake hands and say goodbye. So daily you must go prepared. So when we are leaving a house and friend's house, we'll say, we'll go and come. Eh? But now you have to say, I am going. Tata, not coming back. Gila, inyanne, yanya. So that is the way you are day by day you are putting up it. This is the way you are developing your hardy, training it. So I would say it's a very good, very crispy of the insight meditation. But of course this is, you are learning how to say goodbye to the form. And then you have to say the goodbye to the feelings, the perception and all the kind of thing. But the same pattern. But this is the break-even point. This is the important thing. So even more different patterns, more different challenges, more different complications happen, so much so your experience become multivarious. You can accommodate anyone's experience because you have underwent everything. But if you are going through a very narrow one, very difficult for to share with others. So all the mistakes helpful in the external sasana, you understand when someone is talking because you are undergone. So it's a treasure. Dear Venerable Sir, in walking meditation, there is a point where one foot is preparing to leave the ground and the other foot just planted at this particular point. Where should the mind be? You must try to be no mind. That is the point. The passing the baton to the one person to the other in the relay race. But this point is, throughout your life, you are losing it. Now you know there's a transition. Now the question is, where to keep the mind? Do it 1001 times, you will understand. So when such a thing happens, you must not use the rational mind. You must not plan it, just observe it. Just observe how the the shifting, how the transition takes place. And Buddha says, always it's a magic. Always it is a dream. Always it is a maya. Maya means that kind of a camouflage. And so you are so observe, you observe very lucid and very detailed, when very closely, you find each two steps, there's a death. One is dying and one, the other one is in the birth. In between these two, we'll ask, is the same death is going to recover as the new birth or the different one? All the thing will be answered if you are carefully listening without letting the rational mind to come and play hell. Ask your wisdom to go home. Just be an observer. That is what the vipassana means. Mere observer, passive observer. Don't rationalize it. Don't try to give commentaries. You are not answerable to anyone. You are fully responsible to see it 1001 times and see. Very difficult to put into words. But you have been walking throughout the time, but now only you look. Whenever you look, you see it. But when you see it, very difficult to communicate because these things are not being recognized as valuable and important. So mind has to change its, has to shift its value system. So let it happen. Let it, happen again and again. Try to be fully vigilant, fully diligent and observant. My respected Bhante, I think we all know that the state of just be, non-assuming, thought without thinker, passive observation and the bare attention refer to the thing that is state of being mindful of the present moment. With reference to the vipassana, I long to ask this, why this such simple method, method can lead to the enlightenment. I long to ask this, why this such simple method can lead to the enlightenment. Thank you, Bhante, this question I raised because we all come here in order to taste enlightenment or otherwise emancipation. So you have to understand that just being is the enlightenment. Non-assuming means enlightenment. And passive observation itself is enlightenment. Bare attention itself is enlightenment. So you can promote, you can facilitate the non-achieving, bare attention. So give the maximum the facilities. So once it becomes your second nature, once you become so familiarized with it, then the enlightenment comes and settles. Do what you can do. That is your task. And then the enlightenment will be coming. But if you are not doing that, which is possible, which is simple and which is straightforward, then the enlightenment will feel sorry to come to you. Because you are not welcoming, you are not giving the conducive conditions. Last question, while I was in bed, sometimes before sleep, sometimes middle of the sleep while turning, I felt the dizziness and totally dim for a moment. It was not fearful or painful, just a relaxing feeling. It had happened several times, but not in meditation sitting or walking. Only once it has happened when I was standing. Last night it happened when I was listening to Dhamma. Usually I go to bed with the primary object. Often I felt this feeling also. I remember only if it is not me, not mine, not myself, that's all. What is a result of meditation? Was it a result of meditation or a sickness? Still, it happens once in a while. So we have to wait and see. If it is meditation, you will familiarize. If it is a sickness, we have to go and say, Anicchavata sankhara uppadavaya dhammino uppajjitta niruddhanti te sangopa samosuko. Goodbye. Definitely you will come in the next life and again give a fight. It is not a big thing of this so-called death. So when these things happen in the sleeping, as well as standing, as a meditation, so who the hell can give a yes or no answer? Only thing is, time will answer. The question is, am I ready to go to madness and go to the death? If it is not so, say goodbye and go and home and eat something in the night and sleep. So these are the, for me it is like novelty. It is like something, door opening to the unknown area. So we take it as an adventurous. We present our life and the body. This is, for my vocabulary, this is called the noble quest. Ariya Pariyasana. No one to ask. No one to, there is no role model to follow. Because each and everyone's revelation, each and everyone's experience is different. It is according to your own way, it is, according to your tangle, you have to unentangle it. So therefore, you must be ready to run a risk. And that is what you call risk lover. In the business world, the risk lovers are making good profit. So you have to do the spiritual business and make a profit. Okay, I think there are no more much time for invite more questions because so almost 10 minutes excess we have gone. Okay, Sukhi Hotu, thank you very much for the participation.